Hi, everybody. Welcome back to, the podcast that is about all things that matters to recruiters. And today I'm taking on a subject that gets brought up at every management seminar we do, which is what is the value of outsourced recruiting, particularly offshore recruiting services. I think we all get inundated by emails from these services, and it's hard to tell one from the other. And it also amazes me, because they've been around for such a long time now, how many of you still don't quite know how they work. So I asked the co-president of PSG Solutions, which is not just the provider that my search firm uses, but is the world's largest provider of outsourced recruiting services. They boast four of the world's largest staffing firms as their clients, and have a lot of multiple Fortune 500 companies using it in corporate recruiting. Their co-president, Brian Cotter, to join us. So welcome, Brian. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining me. So first of all, I have to tell you that I'm resentful, because I know you grew up in Connecticut. Now you're in Southern California. And when I drove in this morning, it was minus 10 wind chill. And it just annoys me that you're not here to share this with me. And I'm sure you should know that that's happening so that you don't miss Connecticut in this nostalgic Christmas season. It is rough here, dude.
Yeah, well, I was actually back on the East Coast last week in Boston and in the D.C. area. So I got a little bit of a taste of the Northeast winter. And thankfully, I am back in the warmer confines of L.A.
Right. Yeah. I'm not ready. I'm not ready for 4 more months of this. So, you know, it occurred to me that, especially with your background, because you started in the private equity world of Bain before you moved over into outsourced services and staffing. And it made me curious about the history of outsourced recruiting services. Like, did you see it happening in like the IT world of the private equity acquisitions, and you saw it as a potential solution in staffing? Or did you already see it happening and you said, I want to get in on that? I'm just curious how you made the move over from private equity.
Sure. Yeah, it's more of the former. So we had seen it happening in sector after sector, where companies would turn to, it's really external support, right? So it's whether it's domestic or offshore, or whether you're using technology to do it, or just people. It's the idea of using external support to help your business become more effective and more profitable, grow faster, whatever it may be. And so we saw it across a bunch of different sectors. We didn't really see it at a meaningful level in the recruiting world. And it's a big industry, it's a growing industry. And so we kind of started studying it. And we said, you know, we think it makes sense for this sector. And there really wasn't much being done, certainly not much in a professional way. There were a bunch of mom and pops doing it. And it was really that combination of, we thought there was a need, and we didn't see anyone meeting that need. And so we started the company.
Yeah. And am I right, though, in assuming that in the beginning, people had no problem if they were sending their IT work to be done in Ukraine or Pakistan or the Philippines? But when it came down to, okay, we're going to take part of the recruiting process and we're going to handle that for you, it was amazing to me in the beginning, and maybe I was just too dumb not to have these biases, but it seemed like there was a tremendous amount of bias against using external support. And there's some, like, I don't know, myths or assumptions that I even hear about today in seminars, this idea that I'm going to lose control, or we're used to doing it in-house and I get to see those people every day and I want to control the process, and we've got people here that do that. It's amazing to me how resistant some people are to give up any part of the workflow, even though they don't do it very well.
Right. Absolutely. And it's not, you know, it probably is more common in recruiting than other sectors I've seen. I'm not sure the exact nature of it. It might be because it's such a fragmented industry, right? So if you're a massive Fortune 500 company, you're used to coordinating with external firms all the time, right? You've been doing it for decades, and you do it at a scale where there's, you know, perhaps a more kind of comprehensive, say, change management program, implementations, and things like that. And so it might have something to do with kind of the fragmentation of the industry. But whatever it is, we certainly recognize the same thing. And it's something that we've had to overcome because oftentimes people have those sort of those misconceptions coming in. And frankly, sometimes, you know, it's earned, right? I mentioned kind of that there have long been mom and pops doing this work in the recruiting industry. Those companies sometimes do a great job, but sometimes they're just not set up to deliver great results. And so if people have that experience, they kind of apply that to sort of the whole concept, which is understandable because it's their only data point. And so, you know, so we definitely have seen that, you know, seen that coming in here.
Right. And some of this borders on a couple different things, right? There's the control factor we talked about, and then there's the, you know, the, for lack of a better word, just the ignorance of, well, how does the process work? And there is this sense of, if it's being done far away, then how would these people know who to source? And I'm just curious, what of those original myths still exists? I mean, let's be honest, some of the myths were just as simple as, how could, I don't want someone in China or India or the Philippines calling my clients or calling my candidates. They're not me. They wouldn't know what to say. How many of those myths still exist? What are the things that you find that you have to overcome objection-wise with a client? What are their concerns?
Sure. Yeah, there's probably two different buckets, right? So one big hurdle is if there's a voice component, right? So if an external firm is talking to your candidates, people immediately think to that horrifying tech support call they have when their laptop broke, and they can't understand the person, and they want to kind of smash the computer more after that. And,
right.
And so as soon as you start saying, you know, you sort of get in that world, people are super, super sensitive, which is understandable, right? Because your candidates are kind of your business. And so you want to be sensitive to that. Although the reality is a lot of times that is not the reality, right? If you've got, wherever the company is, sort of, if you've got a well-run firm with good people, communication skills is not an issue, but it's certainly a sensitivity and something worth exploring. So that's kind of one big bucket that everyone cares about.
Right.
And then when there's not a voice component, you mostly come into, and even with a voice component, but this is kind of overarching, is just the, well, we're super specialized. We do things our particular way and no one else could do that. And, you know, everyone thinks they've got this sort of this special sauce, this unique process, whatever it is that you can't kind of do elsewhere, which, you know, again, you know, people are specialized, companies are specialized, but it's like with anything, right? It's the same as you wanted to open up an office in a different state or even hire a new employee. You do things your particular way. Well, someone else can do that alongside you as long as you get them up to speed.
Right, right. And, you know, and I remember I mean, we've had one guy from your company, Ian, with us. I think we're going on a decade. It's been forever. And I always use him as an example when I talk to people who ask me about these types of services. I say, you know, first of all, the voice component you're talking about, the communication issue, when we talk to Ian, he now, over time, knows our database better than most of my recruiters. He also understands the niche because we've trained them and we've shared with him the niche, and he's as much an expert as any of my recruiters. And I think that's sort of lost. People don't realize that you're only going to be as effective as we allow you to be. If we were just to send you a boatload of job orders and say, send us some candidates, and then you send us candidates that companies don't want to see, it's easy to say, well, see, those offshore recruiting services don't work. But it's like, well, did you take the time to train? Did you take the time to give them input so they know what they're looking for? Because we did that early on, and you know, we have the metrics. I mean, you guys find people that are as good a match as the people that have been recruiters here for years. And it's amazing how people don't want to trust that. They don't want to believe that. And I don't know to what degree it's because, well, if I admit that I don't need to spend half a day sourcing candidates, that I can give that to PSG or one of your competitors, and that takes away that time, well, what am I going to do with that time? am I supposed to make more cold business development calls? I don't want to do that. I'd rather say sourcing can only be done by me because I'm so magnificent. I think a lot of times people are reluctant to use sourcers because it then exposes them.
I think there is some element of truth to that. People kind of, they don't like doing, this is true probably for most people, right? They don't like doing the hard part of the job. And so, you know, and so if you get someone that does a chunk of the job, that maybe you're not out there, right? Sort of doing all the cold calling or sort of, you know, closing new business. And if someone does the other part of your job, then you're like, all right, I've got all this additional time. My boss isn't just going to let me hang it on Facebook all afternoon. So I might have to do more of that really hard part. That doesn't sound good. And so you definitely get that at the frontline level. And that's why the whole change management piece is really important, right? You got to make sure that people understand what's in it for them, why you're doing this, all of that good stuff. But to go back to your original sort of thought around people not giving, you know, feedback and wondering why they can't just throw job orders over the fence and get perfect candidates back, right? People ask all the time, well, you know, how do you make this work? What are the best practices? The large majority of the, you know, sort of what I term as the best practice, like how you make this work, all can be kind of synthesized into and distilled into just treat these people like they're part of your team, right? So if you hired a new internal employee, you wouldn't lock them in the closet, shove a piece of paper with a job order under the door and expect perfect candidates back, right? You would make sure they had the access to the right technology. You'd coach them, you'd give them feedback, all that stuff that seems so obvious if it's someone that's sitting in your office. If you just do that same stuff for the person that's helping you externally, you'll solve 95% of the problems.
Yeah, agreed. For sure. For sure. And, you know, and also, and just, you know, for the audience to understand, I mean, Brian and I have done business together, but I'm talking about these services in general. But in particular for PSG, I did a couple of training webcasts early on, and I remember being so impressed, not just with the education level of the people in your company, but the communication skills. It's like some people, if you're paranoid and you say, okay, I'm just going to want them to source, I don't want them talking to my candidates. Well, okay, I think that's a bad use, but fine. I'm just telling you that having done the training, they're better spoken than most of your recruiters is the bottom line. And you guys have emphasized the Philippines. Why is the Philippines the preferred place to do this? Is there a higher education level? What's the reason why you chose the Philippines?
Yeah, it's not the education level. It's really the communication skills for the U.S. market. So the U.S. and the Philippines have a very long history together, right? So the Philippines was a protector of the U.S., you know, multiple times. U.S. culture is pervasive in the Philippines. And so if you talk to someone there, the communication style is not only similar to someone in the U.S., but culturally, right? They follow basketball there. They kind of follow all the, you know, the TV shows in the U.S., pop culture, whatever it may be. And so I'd say the large majority of the time when a candidate or a client or a candidate, I guess in particular, is talking to one of our recruiters, they don't think that they're not out in the U.S. We would never not tell anyone if they asked, but no one even asks because they just sound like anyone else here. And it's not, you know, I may not be overstating it and saying communication skills are never an issue. Now, that doesn't mean I have all great recruiters, right? Because tons of people in the U.S. have great communication skills and they're terrible recruiters, right? So there's still other things you need to do and do well. But the reason why, you know, someone's not getting great results is almost never because they have poor communication skills.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk technology a little bit, because I think when you guys started this, you know, that not just was offshore services new, but also social media and some of the advanced technology tools used for sourcing were new. So a lot of the audience won't understand. Does the PSG person become like, do I give them my LinkedIn account? Do they get a license? Do I use the PSG licenses? Can you explain the technology? Because let's face it, a lot of technology companies, I will never forget, whatever, 10 years ago, one of our recruiters used another person's password for Zoom. And, you know, the Zoom police came down and shut us down for a month and made us feel like, you know, we were criminals. How does the technology piece work for the people in the audience who don't know?
Yeah. And so technology, it's kind of like you mentioned, right? When we started the business, it's been 11 years ago, this month actually,
wow,
technology
great.
you know, it was a core part of what we did, but it was more basic technologies that were used to support the business. Today, it's just, you know, an incredibly important part and growing. And so in addition to kind of sourcing technologies, we're also automating big chunks of our recruiting process. And it's been incredibly impactful to our team and therefore our clients. So we've automated sort of parts of the sourcing process, the initial engagement with candidates. We take that engagement, we actually score candidates to help our recruiters prioritize who they're calling. So they're not calling candidates who aren't interested, aren't available. And we've seen huge, a huge impact on the results. They've literally doubled their connect rate. So think of all the wasted time in terms of calling people who aren't picking up. Half that's been eliminated. And then we've more than doubled the submit rate once we actually do connect with someone for the same reasons. And so all of this has helped increase the hires per person by 80% for our clients that are using this technology.
Wow.
So it's just had a huge, huge impact. And
when you say automate, Brian, do you mean like the phone burner technologies that some recruiting firms are using?
No. So this isn't, we're not using a dialer or anything like that. So we're really careful to make sure that we're not impacting the candidate experience. This is just that initial outreach, right? So we source a candidate and we're sort of engaging with that candidate in a customized manner via email and text, assuming they opted in. And then based on their responses, we score them. And then that scoring feeds right into our operating system, and that prioritizes who our recruiters are engaging with over the phone.
Gotcha. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
In general,
I know that most of your business is large staffing firms, and obviously that kind of automated process is amazing for them. But a lot of people ask me, where does it cross over from what they do versus what the recruiter does? And I tell them, and you tell me if I'm giving the wrong feedback, but I say, well, you make that decision. In other words, you can be just a sourcing company for them, but there's also screening capabilities if you want to use them, and mapping capabilities if you want to use them. But I'm just curious, for the average client of yours, is it 40% sourcing and 60% screening? Do they see it as 80% sourcing? Then they want to take it from there. I mean, we have so much trust in our PSG person. It'd be like, yeah, go ahead and recruit them. But I know a lot of people don't have that kind of trust. How do most people use it?
Sure. It depends on the complexity and the seniority of the candidates. And so for more senior work, like the type of work that you're typically recruiting on, at Hobson, we will just do the sourcing, meaning we will not talk to the candidates. We'll identify them. We may engage with them electronically via email and potentially text. And then we can actually even schedule them onto your recruiter's calendars. We won't talk to them. Once you get to sort of junior mid-level roles, we'll add in a voice component. And for us, if our folks have the appropriate capability to engage over the phone and give you a good result, it's much more helpful for our clients. Just if you think about, your recruiters, it's much more helpful for them to get a candidate that someone has already spoken with and confirmed they're qualified, they're available, they're interested. They're so much closer to the money, closer to getting placed, versus just getting a raw candidate profile that may be a bit on paper, but there's a bunch you can't tell about.
Right. So I've been asking everybody that, you know, runs an organization of any size this question. So I'd be curious, especially because it seems critical to you guys, but people throw around this word AI. And I asked the president of Bullhorn on a podcast like this, how much artificial intelligence is coming to recruiting and when? And of course, everybody, you know, is talking about how Amazon got into the recruiting business briefly and then abandoned it because they couldn't find a sourcing tool that didn't discriminate. And it was amazing how so many people went, oh, great, we dodged the Amazon bullet. They're not going to get into recruiting. And it's like, well, no, wait a minute. We dodged like their rough draft. Like they have plenty of money if they want to go back into it and say, let's look at that. Maybe we can fix that. I'm just curious what your thoughts are as somebody who's running your company. Do you see artificial intelligence coming soon? Is it already here? Where do you see artificial intelligence affecting your business?
Yeah, I So I think it's artificial intelligence and kind of similar technologies are already impacting our business, yeah. I think the recruiting industry. And I think that will just increase over time. I think it's one of those things that with a lot of technology, the impact is going to be actually greater than people are talking about, but it's going to take longer, right? So this isn't going to be next year, all of a sudden, the world's different and robots are doing all the recruiting. Right. But at some point, it's going to have a huge, huge impact on the industry. For now, we talked, you mentioned some of the, we work with some of the larger staffing companies out there, and we're able to sort of talk to their CTOs, their executives, and understand what they're doing. And everyone's got, sort of a case example or a pilot or whatever it may be around this great new technology they've developed or they're using. But the reality is it's having a very small impact on bottom line results. Right. And so it's got a ways to go before it's really changing the industry. People are just doing the most basic of things today. And I think you'll slowly see that kind of trickle in and become more and more impactful. I suspect they'll start on the lower end, the more basic jobs, and then it'll creep up over time. But this is one of those changes that I just think is going to take a really long time. If I look at our clients, we've got some that are pretty advanced on the technology scale, but most of them are, we have some very large, Fortune 100 clients that most of their application process is paper-based. And so, they're kind of light years away from automating their entire recruiting process.
Right.
And, and so while I do expect it's going to have a huge impact, I don't think it's going to be a short-term change.
Yeah, because and I get it, right? It's a low-hanging fruit syndrome. So everything I've seen in the way of, quote, artificial intelligence tools used by our clients, when they show it to us, like, for example, a client of ours in the Silicon Valley said, just so you know, we're going to engage Hobson, but we work, we have an AI recruiting model. Okay, what does that mean? That means everything has to be submitted through our virtual assistant, and the virtual assistant, quote, takes it from there. What does that mean? Well, the virtual assistant, so you submit a resume to a virtual assistant who then sends out invitations to an interview to the candidate if they decide they want to see the candidate, and that's it. It's like, it's a scheduler. Like you can call it a virtual thing, but that's a scheduler. And I think that's pretty much what happens is like everybody tries to get some sort of AI idea into the marketplace, and the low hanging fruit is the front end of the business, right? The scheduling or the sourcing of names. And sure, artificial intelligence, I'm sure, will source names faster than we do now. But at the same time, something has to be done with the information. But I'm kind of like you. It's like, it doesn't scare me now, but it scares me whenever they get deeper into the process and say, okay, if there's an AI tool that can evaluate in a real way whether somebody's a match for a job and whether they're truly interested in the job and not just saying they are, because a lot of people are talking about, facial recognition AI, and you can submit a video resume, or we'll give you 5 interview questions and you can answer them through a chatbot, and then we'll decide whether to hire you. Okay, but that's not going to keep that guy from taking a counteroffer or lying about his salary or changing his mind last minute out of fear of change. It seems like that's sort of our insurance as a research firm, and your insurance as someone who services them is, as long as somebody needs to show some judgment and some influence and manage the process, then you're going to have some sort of human interaction. But I welcome, just like I welcomed you guys, I welcome an AI tool that does the front end a whole lot faster so that I can get to the influence and to free me up to do more influencing. But I think the thing that scares people, if it scares people, it scares them because all they're doing is the front end part, which is easy. And for those people, I don't have much compassion because it's like, well, then you don't deserve these big fees you're charging, right? If a robot can replace you, then it should.
Right. Yeah, agree. And the part that you're talking about, right, that's kind of like almost the sales component where you're getting candidates excited, selling them, positioning, coaching them through the position, like that stuff, it's not even on the horizon when technology is going to do that. So if you're a good recruiter, you're good at those things. I think just as you're saying, that's not going away.
Last question, and we'll wrap up. A lot of I just did a Pinnacle Society meeting, the 75 top recruiters in the business, and the number one concern which I'm doing a webcast about next month, is the amount of Talanac and money's devoted to internal recruiting teams to eliminate or at least cut down severely on fees. And I know, you know, you have a lot of corporate accounts and you're servicing these recruiting teams. Do you sense that there's some seismic shift, or is it just, sure, we might as well try it and see if we can fill some jobs on our own, but we're also going to have a budget for the staffing side, you know, agencies like ours. How big a concern is that, do you think, for our business? Is it existential, or is it just a function of the marketplace?
I think it's the latter. It's a function of the marketplace. Like, I think companies will always have that, and they're always trying to push on it, but it's not. I think just even if they have the interest, they don't have the capability. And so, I don't think it's something where, you know, they immediately need, they're pushing on this, and they're going to make sure it happens. So I don't think it's an existential threat. And, you know, once, at some point, presumably we're having a recession again. And that's when it becomes even harder for these companies to try and take, you know, sort of make these investments internally. And so, you know, I think, you know, that coupled with just their inability to execute in the short term against that, it doesn't, you know, it's just going to be the usual cost pressure.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I don't know what you feel about the recession. Everybody that I talk to says, of course, eventually we have to have one since we've had the longest expansion in history. But the next one, most people feel, is going to be sort of mild. But I would think that'd be an advantage for you guys because, you know, just to be completely honest with the audience, we had more researchers, full-time people with benefits that worked at Hobson for a long time. And now we look at our junior recruiters as people who source in the beginning to learn the business, and that's fine. But then we rely on in our case, you know, Brian's firm, PSG, but we rely on that because you cannot even compare the cost when you look at least for us, 15% increase in healthcare every single year, and the consistency of the results once you guys are trained and once you guys know the niche. I would think a little bit of a recession, I mean, a big recession is not good for anybody, but a mild recession, I would think, would only make companies like yours more attractive because, you know, you can do the work needed to be done for the lesser jobs you have for less money.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think if you look at other markets historically, in a recessionary environment is when outsourcing and outsourced services really clip up because people are forced to really look hard at where they can cut costs. Right. Outsourcing obviously aligns with that. We're actually already seeing the benefit from that, oddly enough, from some of our clients that are saying, well, we think a recession is coming at some point. We want to prepare for that. So we want to kind of adjust now and have this capability. And so it's already helping us. And, you know, if it's not a recession that, you know, no one hires at all, we do anticipate it actually helping our business.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. And just, you know, to put a bow on it, literally, it being almost Christmas, when people always say to me, well, it's not personal as much as having somebody on staff. Well, of course it's not. But, you know, when we send out our pictures today of our ugly Christmas sweater contest that we had at noon hour, which was horrific, you know, we will send that picture to Ian. I mean, he's become part of our team, right? And I think people don't realize how personal this relationship can be, for sure. I appreciate your time, sir. One last question. UConn Huskies, I know you're a big fan. Are they going to be any good this year?
They actually are. They may not win the tournament, but they're going to be a heck of a lot better than they have been the last 2 years. So I'm excited about the season.
All right, we'll keep you in mind when I am at the Civic Center next week watching one of their games. Brian, thank you so
I appreciate
much.
Appreciate it.
Happy holidays.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You
bye. Too.
Bye.